This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the NCC suspended Vision Card and two of its journalists for 1 month each.
That's Moki Edwin Kenzeka reporting from Cameroon's border village. Details coming up.
Also, the DRC's Electoral Commission delays the presidential elections a week. And after weeks of bickering and negotiation in Somalia's parliament, the effort to impeach President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo has stopped.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
The DRC's Electoral Commission delays the presidential elections a week, saying it needs more time to prepare. But the delay raises concerns about the security of President Joseph Kabila's promise to peacefully hand over power after 17 years. Paul Nantulia is an associate fellow at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies here in Washington. Nantulia says a delay of a week won't make much of a difference because there have always been questions of whether a credible election could be held in the DRC, given that President Kabila has a firm hold on the government.
He is firmly in control of the Electoral Commission. The Supreme Court and the Constitutional Court, in case there is a dispute, are loaded with Kabila loyalists. There were a couple of changes in recent months. He's firmly in control of the coercive instruments of the state, the police and intelligence in particular, that have been implicated in human rights violations, the military as well.
He notes that those institutions are all under sanction from the U.S., EU, and other states for human rights abuses and crackdowns on protest over past delays of the elections. He says that it is important that the elections be held and that the Congolese be given a voice, but that is not likely to bring a political change. And he warns that, delay or not, there remains a risk of violence surrounding these elections.
I mean, this didn't start yesterday. Kabila has moved very, very meticulously. So, we do see signs of the potential of violence. There have been skirmishes between opposition supporters and supporters of the ruling coalition in Kasai. In Kinshasa as well, there was these incidents over the weekend. The Catholic Church has been very, very concerned, and rightly so. And what we're hearing is that they're going to deploy 41,000 peace monitors around the country because they're very concerned about what's going on. The police has announced that it will be deploying thousands of security personnel.
He warned that both DRC organizations and international groups needed to be ready to protect civilians and to begin conflict management and mitigation in the coming weeks. Nantulia said the Catholic Church has already started to lead these efforts, which he said it has done often in the past. Paul Nantulia at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson after the election delay was announced.
The Cannabis Developing Council of South Africa is very excited. Since the decriminalization of the use of cannabis in the country, the group says it has made significant progress to have the plant cultivated. A 5,000-hectare farm has been opened in Newcastle, KwaZulu-Natal.
People hoping to cash on South Africa's recent decriminalization of cannabis have gone to work pretty quickly. The country will soon be home to the world's largest licensed commercial cannabis sativa cultivation. From Johannesburg, Yashira Ramprasad has the story.
The Cannabis Developing Council of South Africa is very excited. Since the decriminalization of the use of cannabis in the country, the group says it has made significant progress to have the plant cultivated. a 5,000-hectare farm has been opened in Newcastle, KwaZulu-Natal. The council says it's a very big step in the right direction. Canaculture, a cannabis medical dispensary, is one of the organizations that's obtained a permit for the farm. Founder Indran Govender says cultivation is important because there are thousands of ways in which the plant can be used.
There are over 50,000 uses of it, from biofuels to textile, to biodegradable plastics, and of course a varied medical uses, and also food products. There's also centuries of knowledge, indigenous knowledge of use of these plant, and that also needs to be taken into consideration.
Govender says the Departments of Health and Agriculture were consulted before the permits were issued. The farm is expected to generate thousands of jobs and have a major impact on the economy. At the same time, many are concerned about security as cannabis is a sought-after drug. Many smoke it recreationally. This has raised concerns that workers on the farm may not be safe. But Govender says they have ensured that the property will be secure and have made it clear to the public that the project is about cultivating the plant for purposes other than smoking it.
It's a commercial farm, and therefore it has all of those requirements as a commercial farm would have in terms of fencing and those security elements. And we are very clear that this is a hemp growing project. And it's about giving us a better understanding on the uses at an industrial and at a medical level. And we'll be true to that exercise.
For years, individuals and groups have fought for cannabis to be explored for its medicinal benefits. With the decriminalization, many more people have begun to research its benefits. The farm is just one of many new ventures linked to cannabis. I'm Yashira Rampasad for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Weeks of bickering and negotiation in Somalia's parliament have stopped an effort to impeach President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo. Opponents and supporters of the president agreed in writing yesterday that the impeachment motion was invalid. Analysts said the letter from parliament was a political lifeline for the besieged president. Farmaajo was accused of violating the constitution by signing what his opponents said were secret commercial deals with Ethiopia and Eritrea, as well as unilaterally appointing judges and army commanders. An impeachment motion needs the support of 92 of the 275 members of parliament. 14 of the MPs who were listed on the document complained that they did not actually sign the paper. The parliamentary leadership also argued that the impeachment effort was placed in the wrong court. A similar motion last March against the former speaker, Professor Mohamed Osman Jawari, caused a bitter argument over its validity and finally brought his resignation.
Uganda's government has told police to stop forcing cancellation of concerts by legislator Robert Chagulani, known as Bobby Wine. This followed Wine's complaint to parliament of alleged continued persecution by police. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
For many musicians, the festive season is time to make money from concerts. But for Bobby Wine, police have been cancelling most of the opposition legislators' scheduled concerts, disrupting or foiling them.
In October last year, 5 of my concerts were stopped. This year in October, I organized a concert in Nambole Stadium, but it was stopped by the police for a reason that has not been given yet. On the 2nd of December, I was supposed to attend a concert in Gulu. Even though we had written to the police and accomplished all requirements, when the police got back to me, they brought guidelines telling me that I had not been cleared because I had not fulfilled those requirements.
Other musicians who were scheduled to perform at the cancelled concerts are also counting their losses. Ronald Mainja is a Ugandan musician.
When you include in Bobby Wine, most of the shows just get cancelled by the police. We actually want the speaker to help us by informing the police to stop cancelling our shows.
Wine complained to Parliament that his source of income is under attack.
Honourable members, just like some of you who are doctors, lawyers, pastoralists and teachers, outside this house. I'm also a musician, and that is how my family survives. And indeed, through that trade, right, Honorable Speaker and Honorable colleagues, I employ hundreds of Ugandans. It is my hope and prayer that this Honorable Parliament can rein in on the police and all security organs to stop abusing the laws of this land.
Government and security organs have repeatedly accused Wine of politicizing his concerts and having rowdy revelers. General Eli Tumwine is the Minister for Security.
Honorable Senator Moo will be my witness. When he came to Parliament as a musician, I had a discussion with him and I asked him a question. How will you balance your music from the politics?
Speaker of Parliament Rebecca Kadaga asked government to cite any law that bars a legislator from continuing to practice their profession once they join Parliament.
The form we signed when we are being nominated does not say that if you are a dancer, stop dancing. If you are a teacher, stop teaching. No.
After a heated debate, government bowed to pressure and said Bobi Wine was allowed to go ahead with his concerts, but on condition he fulfills all set security procedures. JJ Odong is Uganda's Internal Affairs Minister.
Government shall not simply look on and abdicate its duties of protecting people and their property. So let us balance entertainment with our safety and security.
Since his entry into Parliament in late 2017, Bobi Wine has been viewed as a big threat to the government of President Yoweri Museveni, since a number of Ugandans, especially the youths, are continuously embracing his people power movement. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yusuf Heap, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The Democratic Republic of Congo's Electoral Commission has delayed the presidential elections by a week. And weeks of bickering and negotiation in Somalia's parliament has stopped an effort to impeach President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo. And the Uganda's government will not cancel Robert Chagulani's concerts. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Cameroon has reopened its southwestern border with Nigeria after about a year of closure as a result of conflicts between Cameroon's military and armed separatists fighting to create an English-speaking state in Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinziga reports from Cameroon's border village of Ikak.
This is Vision Card, a privately owned television station in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, broadcasting special Christmas programs. It has defied Wednesday's order by the Cameroon National Communication Council, NCC, not to broadcast for 1 month. NCC Chair Peter Isoka says he is considering asking the administration and the police to shutter the TV station.
The council is not a policeman and it is not authorized to implement. But we could press on the implementation by consulting with the Ministry of Territorial Administration. We took our decision and we hope that that will be implemented as soon as possible.
The NCC suspended Vision Card and two of its journalists for 1 month each. Ernest Obama was suspended for what the NCC said was the use of hate language that could have ignited tribal conflicts in Cameroon. Nadine Patricia Menge was suspended for erroneously announcing the death of Gabon President Ali Bongo Ondimba during its primetime news program on October 25. On October 30, Gabon also suspended the private channel from broadcasting for 6 months on its territory after it again reported the death of Ondimba, who was said to be in hospital in Saudi Arabia suffering from exhaustion. Gabon's broadcasting authority said the incorrect and false report had undermined its national unity, social cohesion, and public order. Journalist Mervis Kimbi of Cameroon State broadcaster CRTV says the sanction on Vision Card was long overdue.
This particular media house was spreading false information, and information of that magnitude, which could have actually triggered a diplomatic crisis between Cameroon and Gabon. And there has been a lot going on the Vision Card media that has not been punished.
The NCC also suspended Manny Mireille of the TV station Canal 2 International for 6 months, Joseph Roland Giotti of Le Quotidien de l'Economie for 1 month, and Zebazé Benjamin for 2 months. Dom Pipilasi Michel Dopas was suspended for 2 months for repeatedly reporting that Cameroon football star Samuel Eto'o is a homosexual. Journalist Etienne Gallet of La Nation newspaper says the NCC for once did a good job by suspending the media outlets and journalists who were highly unprofessional in doing their jobs.
Ça a été établi, ça a été prouvé qu'ils n'ont pas pu apporter la preuve.
He says he appreciates the NCC for suspending a journalist of the radio station Soleil FM who declared without presenting any evidence that the Cameroon football star Samuel Eto'o is a homosexual. He says although journalists have the right to broadcast information, they should stop spreading slander and telling lies intended to destroy public figures. Reporters Without Borders has always accused Cameroon's Communication Council of taking a tougher line towards journalists and media. But the recent sanctions have been hailed by some media professionals, especially as those sanctioned were asked to defend themselves in front of the NCC. In 2017, the NCC suspended 35 journalists and media outlets, accusing them of failing to respect professional norms and ethics. Cameroon has more than 500 newspapers and 100 radio and TV stations which express divergent views about the presidential election. The Reporters Without Borders 2018 World Press Freedom Index ranks Cameroon 129 out of 180 countries in the world. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Malawi's parliament has passed a bill to allow citizens by birth or descent to have dual citizenship. The bill amends the 1966 Citizenship Act, which prohibits dual citizenship for Malawians over the age of 21. However, Malawians living abroad say they are not comfortable with some of the restrictions in the bill. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Framers of the legislation say the amendment responds to global and regional trends and will bring Malawi economic benefits. Joseph Ejau was the spokesperson for the Department of Immigration and Citizenship Services.
There are a lot of Malawians in the diaspora out there due to different factors. They have ended up acquiring citizenship of other countries. When they come here, they had to apply for the necessary permits, because to us, they were not Malawians. So those restrictions that, you know, were making them prefer to come to Malawi, you know, investing in Malawi. So as a country, we're losing a lot.
Chawua says the law also removes discriminatory aspects of the 1966 Citizenship Act, which stripped Malawian women of their citizenship if they married foreign men.
Once a Malawian woman gets married to a foreign husband and they move to stay in the husband's, you know, country, on the first anniversary of their marriage, the Malawi citizenship automatically ceases. So you can see that section was really discriminatory. It doesn't conform with the spirit of the Malawi constitution.
Kisha Osman Meya says she's excited. She was born in Botswana but lives in Malawi largely because his father is Malawian citizen.
By my birthright, I'm entitled to Botswana citizenship. My mom is South African. She's now Malawian, married to my dad. Through descent, I'm entitled to dual citizenship. So I think it's really exciting that because it's going to open up massive doors, opportunities for investment.
The amended law blocks those with the dual citizenship from holding some public positions. Dual citizens can't be elected president or vice president, and they can't be appointed cabinet ministers or principal secretaries. Sitinga Kachipande is the president of the Malawi Association in Washington, an expatriate group that pushed for dual citizenship. She says it's wrong to prevent others from holding public positions other than judging them by their competence and performance.
We need to think about the bigger picture, because if we hire a PS or minister who's able to create jobs, there'll be more jobs to go around for everybody and who can help Malawi progress. So what we need to do is look at the best person for the job, regardless of whether there's a dual citizen or not.
Kachibande says Malawi should learn from countries that have public officers holding dual citizenship, such as Nigeria and Somalia.
And in Somalia, the current president of Somalia is also a U.S. citizen. He was born in Somalia, moved to the U.S., served in various roles here, and then went back there to contest. They valued his knowledge, his skills, and the access to the networks that he had. So it is possible that there can be no restrictions on this.
But Jawa at the Immigration Department says the restrictions are based on national security.
We're talking of public offices here, where we discuss maybe state secrets, a lot of issues that, you know, how the government is run. So in this case, a person may be compromised in how he handles it, because already this person is a Malawian, but at the same time, he's got that allegiance to another country.
Chawa says the Department of Immigration and Citizenship Services will start public education on the new legislation as soon as President Peter Mutharika signs it into law. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
A Rwandan court has ordered that BBC reporter Focus Indayazira and 12 alleged accomplices be held another 90 days on charges that include terrorism and threatening national security. The judge said the defendants accepted the charges and were trying to get their sentences reduced. He said releasing them would allow them to get rid of evidence or organize other terror acts. Indayazira earlier denied the allegations. Eugene Uimana has more details from Kigali.
Ndayizera was not allowed to speak to the media after the court's decision. His wife Mukarugira Chantal was among family members who were in the courtroom. "This is so sad. It is a very hard even home to explain to children how the situation is. Our firstborn is 7 years old. He keeps on asking, is daddy coming back? And sometimes I cannot find the answer. It is very shocking." Ndayizera went missing and the Rwanda Investigation Bureau RIB paraded him in front of the media a week later. At the time, he said he didn't recognize the explosives that investigators presented, claiming he was planning a terror attack in Kigali. The judge said the defendants admitted their crimes and that they had worked with Cassien Hamhanga, a journalist who was sentenced for 25 years over crimes including planning to kill President Paul Kagame. Hamhanga escaped Nyanza prison a year ago. On Twitter, other journalists and colleagues have called for Daizela's release, saying he is a journalist, not a terrorist. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.